वासुदेवाय So we're reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is from the 14th chapter, entitled The Three Modes of Material Nature, text 22-25. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed to all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye, and who is equal toward the desirable and undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, and who has renounced all material activities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. Arjuna submitted three different questions, and the Lord answers them one after another. So, just the three questions were in text 21. O my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior? And three, how does he transcend the modes of nature? So, Arjuna submitted three different questions and the Lord answers them one after another. In these verses, Krishna first indicates that a person transcendentally situated has no envy and doesn't hanker for anything. When a living entity stays in this material world, embodied by the material body, it is to be understood it is under the control of one of the three modes of material nature. When he is actually out of the body, then he is out of the clutches of the material modes of nature. But as long as he is not out of the material body, he should be neutral. He should engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord, so that his identity with the material body will automatically be forgotten. When one is conscious of the material body, he acts only for sense gratification. But when one transfers the consciousness to Krishna, sense gratification automatically stops. One does not need this material body, and he doesn't need to accept the dictations of the material body. The qualities of the material modes in the body will end, but as the spirit soul, the self is aloof from such activities. How does he become aloof? He does not desire to enjoy the body, nor does he desire to get out of it. Just transcendentally situated, the devotee becomes automatically free. He need not try to become free from the influence of the modes of material nature. The next question concerns the dealings of a transcendentally situated person. A materially situated person is affected by so-called honor and dishonor offered to the body, but the transcendentally situated person is not affected by such false honor and dishonor. He performs his duty in Krishna consciousness and doesn't mind whether a man honors or dishonors him. He accepts things that are favorable for his duty in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, he has no necessity of anything material, either stone or gold. He takes everything as his dear friend who helps him in his execution of Krishna consciousness, and he does not hate his so-called enemy. He is equally disposed and sees everything on an equal level because he knows perfectly well that he has nothing to do with material existence. Social and political issues do not affect him because he knows the situation of temporary upheavals and disturbances. He does not attempt anything for his own sake. He can attempt anything for Krishna, but for his personal self, he does not attempt anything. By such behavior, one becomes actually transcendentally situated.
Krishna
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. So when we are looking at the first of these four verses, Prakasam Chapit Pravitim Chamuman Diva Chatandava, we can see, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed. So, if we're looking at these three words, illumination, attachment and delusion, as translations for the words prakash, pravitta and moha, then we may not get it straight away just by reading through Prabhupada's verse and purport. But if we look at the commentary of the Acharyas, which I did, because it's looking illumination, attachment, delusion, why? Why these words translated like this? And the reason is because Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary is explaining these words in a particular way, and Prabhupada followed that commentary. And prakash, translated as illumination here, is representing the mode of goodness, sattva-guna. And then we see pravritti, or pravritta, attachment, the quality that arises from rajaguna, and delusion, moha, the quality that arises from ignorance, or from tamaguna. In that way, it is relating to the three modes of material nature. And, of course, either one is suffering under the influence of the modes of material nature, or one is hankering to enjoy the modes of material nature. This is material consciousness. So, we see that throughout the verse, a neutral attitude is emphasized. Because it's pointed out, as long as we are embodied, we cannot be free from the influence of the body. Like, we feel the heat. It's not that Amar Bhagavat doesn't feel the heat. He feels it. He's neutral. He's not getting agitated. He's not allowing his mind to get absorbed. Oh, it's a lot. Is a normal conversation topic in India at this time of year. The word garam is very common. It means hot. So one gets hot if one says hot, hot, hot. So hot. Naturally, yes. So it is a very practical thing. We can directly experience that if we remain neutral, then we are not so much affected by the heat or by the cold. As said earlier in the Gita Matras verses, to contia sita susa kudukala agamepi pinimitis tam titiksala, one has to tolerate. So, being neutral or tolerate, this is the same. The mind is not dwelling on the material circumstances that are created by the three modes of material nature. Jayato visyapun samsangate subhajayate. When we start to dwell on material objects, then attachment arises, either positive or negative attachment. So either we start to hate, I hate, 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 or I love, love, love.
Srila Prabhupada in 1944 in his Back to Godhead, which he published with so much difficulty, the one for which he had to convince an army officer to release paper, because paper was reserved for the war. Prabhupada said, yes, therefore my magazine must be published. It is for the war. It's for the war. Because my magazine will bring peace. And he got it. And then he brought it out. And then he wrote an article. And he explained that the other side of love in the material world is frenzy. He used the word frenzy, which is like a state of intense anger or aggression, intense aggression. So, which was representing the world war that was going on in full swing in 1944, the frenzy of the war. And Prabhupada pointed out the love for one's country, the love for the homeland, that creates the frenzy for the others who are not part of that. So the love and hate come together. Yes. So, one can say I love heat and I love cold, or the other way around. And like this, the dualities. Generally, loving one means hating the opposite. And that is material existence. Neutrality is the position that we take, but this is tapas. This is tapas. This is something which is different from the senses, because the senses are sending information signals to the mind, like the dashboard. The senses are like sending signals, like red lights that are flashing on a dashboard. Too hot, too hot, okay? Too hot, alarm, alarm. So to be neutral when such, or it can be another signal. Very attractive, you cannot let this opportunity go by. It may never come again. You'll never forgive yourself if you let it go. So the senses are sending these kind of signals, and they are received in the mind. It's there where the signals come in, and it is there where we have to be neutral. We cannot be neutral in the senses. That's not possible. And that's the point. The senses will not be neutral. Hungry is hungry. You can't stop it. Stop to be hungry. Doesn't work. But when we fast, all right, just don't think about it. Try not to think about it. Oh, we're fasting. I'm so weak. Oh, we're fasting. I'm so sick. Oh, we're fasting. Oh, I always get sick. Oh, and why are we fasting? Actually, it's not good for my constitution to fast. Really? No, this is like, Kapha people can fast, but Vata people, they can't fast at all. And Pitta people also, they need to eat. Otherwise their own fire burns their bodies. It's even dangerous to fast. Yeah, serious. Yeah. Alright, I fast half day then. Yeah. So the more one allows the mind to become preoccupied, naturally it becomes more difficult. So one learns to withdraw the mind. Withdraw the mind from these sense objects. And just as we're doing in chanting japa, we withdraw the mind and bring it back to the Holy Name. From everywhere, we just withdraw the mind. So, it automatically brings that state of neutrality. We become focused on Krishna. Devotional service itself is the means to become absorbed. So The Gaudiya Vaishnavas do not need to spend so much exercise in trying to control the senses. And therefore, the Gaudiyas are not putting so much emphasis on austerity or renunciation. It is said that austerity and renunciation, these are preliminary activities. Preliminary. They're actually not directly part of bhakti. They're not one of the 64 limbs of bhakti. Therefore, one can be as renounced as one wants, but it doesn't in any way increase our love of God. So one can fast very, very rigidly, but that in itself is not bringing us love of God. Therefore, our fasting is simply to create space for hearing and chanting. That's it. If on these fast days we are not getting absorbed in hearing and chanting, then there's very little benefit from the austerity in terms of trying to make the mind neutral. Because if by such a technique of austerity or renunciation one is trying to make the mind neutral, it is still the roots of the material enjoyment have not been removed. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agam nantikarsnyaya niharam vivaskara. Only by devotional service are actually the roots of material enjoyment removed. So otherwise, we see in the 15th chapter, we see the description of the banyan tree of material existence. And it says that all our material activities, all these different activities become branches and then other branches from the activities. And this is the network that we built up, called our life. So many things we're doing, and all that creates a huge network of activities and the fruits of those activities. Isn't that weird? Yes. So one can minimize the fruits of these activities by renunciation, by tyag. Give them up. One can minimize his involvement in endeavoring for such activities by tapasya. No, we will not do it. Yeah, but the cushion is comfortable. No, it's all right. I will not take it. I just sit on the hard floor. It's all right. That kind of mood. All right, but that will diminish the plant. That will diminish all the branches and the fruits of our activity. But it will not cut the roots at all. So it will only cut the plant, and the roots still stay in the ground. And again, with time, another plant with many branches and so on will re-emerge. That is the nature of. That is why we understand that devotional service is completely different. Agam dinvanti karsnena niharani vaskara. It destroys that root because it gives us something so much more wonderful. So much more wonderful than one lets go, naturally. When we are appreciating Krishna, then who cares? Who cares about all these material things? Just like in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's that story of an astrologer named Sarvagya, and he comes across one man who is poor, and he says, actually you are not poor, you are not poor. He said, your father actually left you great wealth, but your father left his body in a foreign land, and he was not able to tell you where he left that wealth. But he kept it hidden for you.
So listen very carefully. If you go towards the north and you dig towards the north, be careful, beware, because in the north there is a big black snake and he will devour you. So do not dig to the north. Then the west. Do not dig to the west, because in the west there is a ghost, and this ghost will possess you.
Will possess.
Do not dig to the south. Whatever you do, not to the south. North, west, south. Because in the south there are wasps and drones, and they will sting you. In many ways. But dig towards the east. And even a little digging towards the east will very quickly bring results. So, digging to the north is referring Digging to the south is referring to the karma kanda, trying to get material benefits from our activities, but in a pious way. So it says, then you get all these things. Yes, you get wealth, you get health, you get beauty, you get it all, nice house, nice this, nice everything. Yeah, but it says these things will also sting you. They sting you because it doesn't come by itself. Everything comes with two sides. That is the nature of the material energy. It's like, you can ask the question, which car is better? An ambassador? In the Sprite, with all due respect. Or a Mercedes, Germany's pride. Which car is better? Which car is better?
BMW.
Okay. Sporty car. All right. German car. Yeah? Well, you know, it is and it is not. See, when the ambassador breaks and you take it to be fixed, 300 rupees, 400 rupees, 500 rupees, maybe 1,000 rupees, finished. Try that with your BMW. It starts with 10,000 rupees, 20, 30,000 rupees to get it fixed. So sometimes it's better and sometimes it's worse. So this is the nature of the material world. Our mind is analyzing things. This is better. Yeah? This is better. Yeah? It's like, you may think, like, I'll have a nice house in Vrindavan. This is better than a nice place to stay. Yeah. Or some renunciant might think, I will not have a house in Vrindavan because this is better. Now, what is better? It's hard to say, no? Because having a house in Vrindavan, alright, it's very nice, but there are many complications also arising from it. Right? There are monkeys, for one thing, and they have to deal with them. Right? It's a big problem, everybody knows it. Then there's the Vrindavan dust. It is so fine, it's of course merciful dust, but it's everywhere. Everywhere. It penetrates everywhere, so it's a dust all the time. Then there are all kinds of people who want money from you. They also come and harass this, that. So what can be said? There are, as soon as one has a house, there are many strings attached. Therefore, someone else say, no, I won't have a house, I'll just have a suitcase. Not even a suitcase, can be true. So, material energy is actually never comfortable. It's the mind that sort of thinks this is more comfortable than that. Really, think about it.
The mind is deciding this is better and that is worse. But one sees the great sages, very aloof. Sukadeva Goswami is described in the Bhakti Sandarbha as a transcendental personality who had one foot in the material world and one foot in the spiritual world. He was in a material body, that's what it means. But at the same time, he was completely in the spiritual world. And he just didn't care about anything material. Another example is Jat Bharat. He didn't care about anything material. So absorbed. And then we see Sudama the Brahmana being very poor and still satisfied. His wife was only upset because of her husband, because she saw his health was so bad. Go to your friend Krishna. See if he can help us. Bring him a gift. It's... Yes, he was okay. And he's hiding the flat rice. Krishna snatched it. Very nice. And then he came back and all his wealth, his whole neighborhood had changed. And this beautiful aristocratic lady with servants surrounding him is coming down the pathway in his direction. And suddenly he's looking again at him. It's not my wife. You heard it was. So just see. But Sudama was not disturbed, nor by the wealth, nor by the conditions of poverty. Going a little further into the verse, because you know you can take this verse and go with a magnifying glass over every point, but then you run out of time. It's midstream, so I'm already seeing 6:10. So I will jump a little bit to the things that stand out. Who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye. Yeah, I mean, why have these things, or why endeavor so much for gold? Gold will come and if one lives a life dedicated to Krishna, then one will be provided. And that is the point. A devotee is not concerned because a devotee knows that Krishna provides. Krishna provides, and he has that faith. Not that he is lazy, but he knows that I will not starve. Also, he learns to be satisfied. He learns to be satisfied with simple means. He learns to deal with the mind. In the 18th chapter of the Gita, we hear that one of the austerities of the mind is to be satisfied. And I kind of like that, you know. Since when is an austerity to be satisfied? But the point is, it means to be satisfied with whatever comes on its own accord. When we are actually following the proper scriptural injunctions in our life, then whatever comes, to be satisfied with that. Yeah. And to be satisfied with what comes by destiny. And Prabhupada explains that one must try to sustain himself by about maximum 6 hours of work. He says 4 to 6 hours of work. Well, where in the world can you get a job like that? It's hard to get nowadays, 4 to 6 hours of work as a job. and full pay. Forget it. So the point is, whatever comes natural from that work, that one should accept for one's maintenance and then live like that. I have my story when I was temple president here. Srila Prabhupada had made a system, and we still followed that when I was the temple president, that the temple president must sign every check that goes out of the temple. And, you know, everything was going, no internet banking, everything by check. Yeah. Lots of checks, my God, every day, so many checks. Signing checks. And the bank was closing at 12 o'clock. I don't know now, but it was always closing at 12 o'clock, so there was a lot of anxiety at 11:45, because lots of people suddenly remember that they need money at 11:45. So I get very busy, and all these people come with their checks. And sometimes I was in the shower and people knock on the door. The sign is check, the bank is closing. My hand is wet. We have a towel. They were very determined. Even when I escaped to Govardhan, people would, you know, go on a parikram, and people would go, oh great, I've been trying to meet you the whole week, can you sign this check? It's just too much. So I decided to just go into the fields, you know, like I'm disappearing into the fields, I'm going to chant Hare Krishna in the fields, no checks. So I went out, walked through the fields, chanting japa, very peaceful and very happy. Just some new guy, and very nice. And then I came to this land, and there was a farmer. And he goes, you see, this is my kitty. This is my grain, this is my crop. My crop. He goes, yes. He says, you know, this is my land. He's very proud, you know, like a child. So I thought, this man is very simple, little childish, you know. And then he goes, yes, I come here every day. So, because he acted like a little child in my mind, I started to treat him also like that. So, really? You come here every day? Oh, very nice. He says, yes, I come here every day. Very good. He says, yes, every day, 1 hour. I said, oh, you come here every day, 1 hour. Yeah, stood. Then he says, yes. And then I go home, he says, and then I do puja. And I was thinking, he's not such a child. He's got to figure out. He works every day, 1 hour. Yeah. And for the rest, he does puja. Better life. I have with all these checks, you know, this big establishment, all day signing, right? This guy, he probably has a small little house, and he lives there with his wife and all his children, right? And the whole, when there's puja, the whole family does puja. And actually, it's pretty good. It's like they got it figured out. Yeah, so something to say for being. So this is the idea that one is not getting so enamored by wealth. There's a limit to how much austerity one can take. There is a point of tolerating, and there's a point of dying. Yes. I mean, you can fast, one day, 2 days, 1 week, 2 weeks, I mean, I'm not the greatest faster, and I've done once 17 days, and that was getting a little difficult. It was getting at one point difficult to respond to the world. That's when a doctor advised me, eat. Anyway, it still took some days. But some can fast 40 days. But at one point you die. You just die. Yeah. So austerity is such, renunciation is such. At one point you die. You can go so cold, you know, tolerate it until, you know, you're frozen. Right? It's like in my country, if you have no heating, you know, here in India,
we have no heating, just Maya, Sanskritification.
In my country, no heating, dead homia. You'll be frozen in the morning, ice. It's like this, what to do. So maybe some heating is a good idea. So in other words, it's not only about being neutral. We have to do things. We have to adjust ourselves to the three modes of material nature. We have to make arrangements to protect the body. But minimal, what comes natural? Not more than that. Not that we get enamored by more and more and more. But, you know, what is minimal for one may be one standard, and for another one, another standard, and it doesn't really matter. There is the story of Pundarik Vijayaniri, great Vaishnava, a big, big famous guru. Where is Pundarik Vijayaniri? Had come from East Bengal, and he was coming to the associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, Gadadhar, of all devotees, Gadadhar had heard about the glories of Pundarik Vijayaniri. So he was so famous, he was really eager to meet him. And then he came to meet Pundarik Vijayaniri, and there this Pundarik is sitting, right? And his hair was very beautifully done, you know. His clothes were all made of silk. He's sitting on this big throne with nice cushions on all sides, nice pots with scented water nearby, some servants fanning him, offering him pan. Chewing and spitting pan and everything. When Gadadhar saw him, immediately in his mind, he said, "Oh my God, oh my God, is this Pundarik Vijayaniri? Oh no, oh God, oh no, a cheater, oh God, is, oh no, is this a big guru? Oh, please." So Gadadhar stood there with a face. Couldn't even hold his head straight. And then Mukunda, who was from the same village as Pundarik Vijayaniri and had accompanied Gadadhar and brought him there, Mukunda, he knew actually Pundarik Vijayaniri's depth in love of God. So then he began to sing one bhajan, and Mukunda was a great singer, and he sang about the glories of Krishna who killed Putana. And when Krishna killed Putana, not only did he kill Putana, he gave Putana, he gave her the position of like a mother in the spiritual world, because after all, she offered him her breast. And the poison, he overlooked it, accepted that service, and gave her that reward. So when Pundarik Vijayaniri heard that verse, he was just contemplating on how merciful is Krishna. And of course it was particularly child Krishna in his childhood. happen. Because we actually understand that Punarvijanini was none other than Maharaj Vrishabhanu, the father of Srimati Radharani, who had again reappeared in our Pundarik Vijanini. And since Maharaj Vrishabhanu was a great king and lived in great opulence, that bath was also there in Pundarik Vijanini. So, what was natural to him was not natural to Gadara. Gadara had another standard of life, more simple. So from this we should also take, devotees should not impose all kinds of standards upon each other. That's an important point. Not that we look at each other and go, oh my God, look at that cushion. He's wearing silk.
Silk?
Is the water cold enough?
If you leave it in the winter in the bucket overnight, it's colder than it comes out of the tap. Because the tap, it pumps it out of the ground and it's warmer. So leave your bucket overnight. Cold. So all that's not so important. You have to finish on the dot or we can steal a few minutes at least. May as well tell us. Okay, long story. When I became temple president here in Vrindavan, right, we had four GBCs and one of the first services they gave to me was this, is that the Goshala had so many bulls. And they said, there is one Baba, he lives across the Yamuna, near Mat. And this Baba is a Nanga Baba, he goes naked. Yeah? And this Baba, he accepts cows from anywhere. So why don't you go there and ask him to take 30 of our bulls? So anyway, they told me to go. So I went and... It took some time before I went, actually. The weather had become cold, so I'd already been temple president for a couple of months. I think first I didn't do it, and then they came back, GBC, and they told me again, and then I did it. So it was cold. It was really cold. And you know, Vrindavan, cold means cold. So I was dressed up in my best foreign woolen sweater with serious socks and head and everything. And we were going, this local devotee, one devotee knew the way, took me to the Baba. So the Baba was sitting there in front of a fire, naked. And he had a little shelter of tarpaulin over his head. And the smoke of the fire was going in. So we came and we sat down. And I was freezing, even with my warm clothes on. He is sitting there. And the smoke was going in the tent, which is half open. And the devotee who was with me started coughing. And the guy said, in good English, he says, gets a bit smoky, doesn't it? Some sort of character with tattoos. Yeah. Really tough dude.
Yes.
And he told us how he was doing it. He says, you know, he says, my cows, you know, I have 475 cows. I said, how do you take care of so many cows? He says, it's simple. He said, you see that road? The villagers, they drive there with their busa, their straw on the tractor, they drive past. And you know, I just stand at the road with my trident and tell them that this is going to the cows. So in that way, I feed my cows. Sometimes, he says, the villagers take the other road
which is 40 kilometers extra to avoid me. He said, then, when nobody comes past for some days, then I go to the village. And then I tell them to bring some busa. Then if they don't bring quickly, then I beat somebody up, and then usually they bring busa. So he was quite expert. And but single-handedly taking care of 475 cows, and so tough. And then, I felt like ashamed. You know, I felt like I can't ask him. You know, that's too much. You know, how can I ask him? We are a whole society. We have less cows than he has. How can I ask this man to take care of our cows? So I didn't ask him. But then the devotee who was with me, you know, he told him in his ear. He said, I'll show you my goshala. And he's going around showing the goshala, he's showing everything. And he said, and here we have very nice development plans. We're going to build like a very beautiful goshala, first class, everything. Yes? And it's going to be very nice, marble, everything. He said, and in there, we're going to put your 30 bulls and you're going to pay for it. So he was pretty sharp. Anyway, I said, well, thank you very much. We'll discuss it, you know, because it's a very society, so I have to discuss it. And then, but then when we left, he said, oh no, please, please don't leave. It is so rare that I'm getting some association of some devotees. Right? Because with all this austerity, right, and all this toughness, and being like a stone and not affected by anything, he also felt the pain of the emptiness of material existence, which can only be filled in the association of the devotees. So that is the real thing. It's not about renunciation this way or that way. It's about the association of the devotees where we can glorify Krishna. And he understood. He also told one more thing. And like he said that how he got to this. He said that once he was in some ashram, in Gandhi ashram, he stayed there overnight. And then in the next morning, they said that, how are you going to pay your debt? He says, debt? You want to take money from me? He said, I have no pockets, I have no possessions. All I have is this trident. You want that? Oh, he said, but in the Vedas it says that if you've taken someone's salt, then you owe a debt to that person. So did you take salt? He said, well, if it says in the Vedas, then I have a debt. I said, then what do you want? They said, we want that you go to Vrindavan and protect the cows. So that's what brought him to do all this. Who was this man? And what a soul. What a soul. So, what a pious soul. Then I think, I'm just a mercy case. I have no piety at all. Salt or no salt, you know. Forget it. Yeah, just for a little salt, and I'm going to sacrifice my whole life. Yeah. But it says in the Vedas, yeah, I know. But you know, I gotta be realistic. Yeah. That's the difference between him and me. For me, it's gotta be realistic. But for him, whatever the Vedas said, that's realistic. So we don't have so much piety, we don't have so many qualifications. But somehow or other, we got a gift. Srila Prabhupada, a nice gift called the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And it's quite an amazing gift. Temples all over the world, you know. I'm a Swami, you know. I travel all over the world, you know, like to the most remote countries, you know, only to find that, you know, generally speaking, there's already a temple nearby. Right? All you have to do is look at Krishna.com and just get the list and, you know, okay, rock off for Prasad, you know. Just organize the tickets, you know, between lunch and breakfast, and everything quite comfy. Is it Parivrajak or is it Kutichak? What is it? Yeah. So Prabhupada gave us a very comfortable situation. Everything is there. Not so austere. And whatever austerity remains, that we have to take. Neutrality we still have to develop, so that we are not going to respond so much to the laws of nature and just serve Krishna. But the easiest, you know, all this yogic exercise is difficult. And the easiest is just to work hard in devotional service. You see, then you don't have to think about all that. Am I neutral now? You know, just be too busy. If you're just too busy, then, well, no time. No time to worry about the mind, no time to worry about the senses. No time for Maya. Yes, Maya, I know. I'll be back a little later. So much, sir. This is actually how Prabhupada organized it. And this is how it works for most of us. Just get busy in emotional service. Okay. I'm finished up. Still a few questions and then we go.
Which story?
I never finished. Huh? Oh, I got lost in the sound. Yes, I'm going to repeat. I spoke about the astrologer and the four directions, and I went to the south and got stung by the wasps and drones, and it knocked me out. So, anyway, then we've recovered by now. So we're going to try again for that treasure. Let's dig a bit to the west. Yeah? But there in the west, there is the spirit of impersonalism. And that ghost of impersonalism, it will possess us and hound us. Oh. In the west, impersonalism? Oh. When Prabhupada preached against impersonalism in the west, then one of his leading disciples said, "But Srila Prabhupada, why are you always preaching about impersonalism in the West? In India, I can understand, but in the West, here, why not preach against atheism?" Prabhupada said, "You're saying that because you're an impersonalist." Anyway, no names mentioned this time. But the point is that it's true. It's true. Although in India impersonalism is there, we see that in India the culture is still much more personal. It's aimed at worshipping devatas, demigods. In the West it gets really impersonal, very impersonal. You sit in an Indian train, everyone, it's like one big family on a journey. That's an Indian train. Right? The whole family is out together. Life stories are exchanged. Advice is given by the elders. It's like everyone's there. The grandparents, you know, all the elders become everyone's grandparents. All of this. India is one big family like that. not in the West, a Western train, a Dutch train sent out from Holland. In the winter, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it's dark. People sit in the train, and it's cold. Nobody looks anybody in the eye.
And they don't look anyone in the eye.
But there is the window, and it acts like a mirror because it's dark outside. So people look in the mirror at other people. Look in the window at other people. And then they catch you. Quickly. Nobody speaks. Nobody. Nobody. Not one word. Some countries are still more impersonal. In some countries, again, I won't name a country, but if you come to some country, there are no people at all. It's only machines. You come on the airport, there's no people. It's like machines, the doors, they open, you go through, your luggage comes out. Then on a screen it says, for lost bags, push this button. And then they speak through a phone, only your voice comes out of the wall. Lost bag. No people. In that country I went to the temple and there was nobody there. But there was a note. And it said, Prasadam is ready in the kitchen. We have systematically gotten rid of the demigods in our philosophy. No demigods. Finished. We used to have them, but not anymore. We got rid of them long ago. Yes. And in Christianity withdrew on its second position. The first position was that there is a personal God. He lives so up in the clouds and there in the heavens. But nowadays, everybody has been up in the clouds. Did you see any God up there? Any shepherd and sheep? Huh? Have you seen? Huh? Any angels playing trumpets? Or harps? Have you seen? Huh? You saw? Yeah, you saw? I didn't see her. Nothing. So therefore, it says, no, this is the mythological part of the Bible. Actually, God is all-pervading love and all-pervading intelligence. And we have come back to Pachamayavad. So Mayavad is deeply rooted in the West, actually. Okay, now dig to the North, it's the yogis, the mystics. In South India, you find all these Karma candies, yes. Jai Jagadish Hare, it's all for money, all for blessings, material blessings. So much worship, karma candy. Then, impersonalism, then in the north, mystic power, which is like the black snake that devours us. To the east, bhakti, bhakti. So like that. That's the story. Last question, since we just had a new comment. Any questions? Why did I say go? No? Okay. Then we're finished. We thank you very much.